the subject or issue or element, I guess I might say, of voice is one that's concerned me for a long time. I think because one of the comments that I would get on my fiction all the time was, oh, it's got great voice. And so I just kind of always wondered, well, what does that necessarily mean? I'm just kind of doing what I think is natural in terms of making a good story and making that story interesting.
You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Air Schooner presents its reading series, produced by Scott Winter, with production assistance by Catherine Larson and Franny Sprouls.
You're listening to the Air Schooner Reading Series. I'm your host, Adrian Kesters. Today you'll be listening to writer ZZ Packer. Packer's the author of the collection of short stories, Drinking Coffee Elsewhere. The title story of that collection was featured in the debut fiction issue of The New Yorker and received critical acclaim from The New York Times and Harper's. Packer was named a Stegner Fellow at Stanford University and was awarded the prestigious Guggenheim Fellowship for Fiction in 2005. In 2010, Packer was named one of The New Yorker's 20 under 40 luminary fiction writers. In today's episode, Packer reads a selection from her short story, The Ant of the South.
The Ant of the South. Opportunities, my father says after I bail him out of jail. He's banging words into the dash as if trying to get them through my thick skull. You've got to invest your money if you want opportunities. It's October of 95, and we're driving around Louisville, Kentucky, in my mother's car. Who knows why he came down here, 40 miles south of where he lives, but I don't ask questions that are sure to have too many answers. I just try to get my father, Ray Bivens Jr., back across the river to his place in Indiana. Once we're on the Watterson Expressway, it seems as if we're about to crash into the horizon. The sunset has ignited the bellies of clouds. The mirrored windows of downtown buildings distort the flame-colored city into a funhouse. I can already see that it'll be one of those days when the sunset is extra brilliant, though without staying power. My father just got a DUI, again, so that didn't stop him from asking for the keys. When I didn't give them up, he sighed and shook his head as though I withheld keys from him daily. "Come on, Spurge," he'd said. "The pigs aren't even looking." He's the only person I know who still calls cops pigs, a holdover from what he refers to as his Black Panther days, when the brothers raked their globes of hair with black-fisted afro-picks, then left them stuck there like javelins. When, as he tells it, he and Huey P. Newton would meet in basements and wear leather jackets and stick it to Whitey. Having given me investment advice, he now watches the world outside the Honda a little too jubilantly. I take the curve around the city, past the backsides of chain restaurants and malls, office parks, and the shitty Louisville Zoo. "That's your future," he says, winding down from his rant. "Sound investments." "Maybe you should ask the pigs for your bail money back," I say. "We could invest that." He doesn't respond. By now, he's too busy checking out my mom's new car. Ray Bivens Jr. doesn't own a car. The one he just got his DUI in was borrowed, he told me, from a friend. Now he takes out the Honda cigarette lighter from its round home, looking into the unlit burner as though staring into the future. He puts the lighter back as if he'd thought about pocketing it, but has decided against it. He drums a little syncopation on the dash, then, bored, starts adjusting a seat as though he's on the Concord. He wants to say something about the car, wants to ask how much it costs and how the hell Mama could afford it, but he doesn't. Instead, out of the blue, voice almost pure, he says, "Is that my old dress jacket? I love that thing." "It's not yours," I say. "Mama bought it. I needed a blazer for debate." The words come out chilly, but I don't say anything else to warm them up, and I feel a twinge of childishness mentioning my mother, like she's beside me, worrying at the jacket hem, smoothing down the sleeves. I make myself feel better by recalling that when I went to post bail, the woman behind the bulletproof glass asked if I was a reporter. "You keep getting money from debate," he says, "and we could invest." Now, when most people talk about investing, they mean stocks or bonds or mutual funds. What my father means is his friend Splo's cockfighting arena, a or some dude who goes door to door selling exercise equipment that does all the exercise for you. He'd invested once in a woman who tried selling African cichlids to pet shops, but all she'd done was dye ordinary goldfish so that they looked tropical. "Didn't you just win some cash?" he asks. "From debate?" "Bail," I say. "I used it to pay your bail." He's quiet for a while. I wait for him to stumble out of thanks. I wait for him to promise to pay me back with money he knows he'll never have. Finally, he sighs and says, "Most investors buy low and sell high. You know why they do that?" And with my father, there are not only trick questions, but trick answers. And before I can respond, I hear his voice, loud and naked, saying, "Do you know why they do that?" And then he's shaking my arm as if trying to wake me. "You answer me when I ask you something," he says.
Through voice, Packer reveals both the strength and insecurity that defines the character Spurgeon. His voice is a partial illumination of the misunderstandings that tinge his relationship with his father and that mask his long-felt disappointment. Here, Packer talks about her understanding of how voice in narrative reflects a character's essence.
Voice is the clearest manifestation of a character's consciousness set up against that character's agency or free will. And so, given that, it's kind of at this intersection of the political, meaning that it's this sort of character status in the world and also how they view the world and their particular placement, but then also that of kind of, you know, some of the theory of mind people who talk about consciousness and what it means to be human and the sort of evolution of narrative and the sort of roots of narrative.
In The Ant of the Self, Spurgeon is conflicted by his independence and his feelings of obligation to his father. As Packer says, his conscious desires are limited by his agency.
I twist my arm from his grasp to show that I'm not afraid, and we swerve out of our lane. Cars behind us swerve as well, then zoom around us and pull ahead as if we're a rock in a stream. "Do you know who this is?" he says. "Do you even know who you're talking to?" "Haven't been talking to anyone, but I keep this to myself," he goes on and says. "I'll tell you who you're talking to. You're talking to Ray Bivens Jr." He used to be this way with Mama, never hitting, but always grabbing, groping his halitosis forever in her face. After the divorce, he insisted on partial custody. At first, all I had to do was take the bus across town. Then, when he couldn't afford an apartment in the city, I had to take the Greyhound into Backwoods, Indiana. I'd spend Saturday and Sunday so bored, I'd work ahead in textbooks, assign myself homework, whatever there was to do while waiting for Ray Bivens Jr. to fart himself awake and take me back to the bus station. And that was how debate started. Every year, there was a different topic, and when they made the announcement last year, it was like an army recruitment campaign, warning students they'd be expected to dedicate even their weekends to the cause. I rejoiced, thinking I would never have to visit Ray Bivens Jr. again. And I was good at debate. My brain naturally frowned at illogic. But I don't think for a minute that my teachers liked me because of my logical mind. They liked me because I was quiet and small and not rowdy like they expected black guys to be. Sometimes, though, the teachers would slip. Once, my history teacher, Mrs. Ampersand, said, "You stay away from those drugs, Spurgeon, and you'll go far." That was the kind of thing that could stick in my stomach for days, weeks even. I could always think of things to say about a debate topic like U.S.-China diplomatic relations, or deliver a damning rebuttal on prison overcrowding, but it was different with someone like Miss Ampersand, and all debate logic fell away, and in my head I might call her a stupid bitch, or tell her that the strongest stuff in my mother's house was a bottle of NyQuil. Later, calm again, Ray Bivens Jr. says, "Imagine a stock. Let's say the stock was the one I was telling you about, Scudder Midcap. The stock is at $50, but if it's a winner, it doesn't stay at $50 for long. It's going to go to 200, let's say, or 300. But first, it's got to get to 51, 52, and so on. So a stock increasing in price is a good sign, and that's when you buy." I make sure to tell him thanks for telling me this. It doesn't even matter what you invested in either, Ray Bivens Jr. goes on and says. That's the beauty of it. You don't even have to think about it. That's something you won't hear from an accountant. You mean, I say, a stockbroker. A stockbroker advises about stocks, not an accountant. His face turns bitter, as though he's about to slap me, but then he thinks the better of it and says, so you know who to go to when you get some extra cash. Look, I say, I just told you I don't have any money. I try to concentrate on looking for gas station signs in the dark, but he says, you will, Spurgeon, then puts his arm around me like a prom date, and I can smell his odor from the jail. I don't have to see his face to know what it looks like right now, urgently earnest, a little too sincere, like a man explaining to his wife why he's late coming home. I'll pay back every penny. I mean that. I believe you, I say, to placate him, prying his arm from where it rests on my neck. You believe me, he says, but do you believe in me? And then he puts his arm back where it was, like he's some suburban dad, some little league coach congratulating his charge. I believe in you, I say. His arm falls away of its own accord as he settles deeper into his car seat with this knowledge, the leather sighing and complaining under him. I take the exit that promises a sit-go and park at the gas pump. You usually don't see insects in this weather, but the garbage can between the diesel and the unleaded swarms with flies. The fluorescent lights stutter off and on as I begin pumping gas. I can hear what my mother would say, that my father's a cross I have to bear, that the good book says a child shall lead them, and all that crap, which basically boils down to he's your father, your blood, not mine. Ray Bivens Jr. leans against the car and stretches. Then he cleans the windshield with a squeegee. After that, he sniffs and looks around as though he's checking out the scenery. When I finish filling the tank, he says, hey, Spurge, how about breaking off a few bills? You know they frisk me clean in lockdown. I give him a 20 and wait in the car. He's in the sit-go for what seems like half an hour. He's in there so long I get out and wipe off the squeegee streaks he left on the windshield. Finally, he comes back with a six-pack of Schlitz and a family-sized bag of Funyuns. Listen, he says, handing me a beer, we have to make a quick stop to Jasper. Jasper, Indiana, is where his ex-girlfriend Lupita lives. I knew it, I say, and hand back the unopened beer before starting the car. You're in trouble. He opens the can, looking as though both the Schlitz and I have disappointed him. One of the fluorescent lights overhead blinks out. What the hell are you talking about? I say, why do we have to go to Jasper all of a sudden? And he says, if you shut your mouth and go to Jasper, you'll find out. And I say, this is Mama's car. She wants it back. And he says, why do you have to act like everything I ask you to do is going to kill you? You're my son. I tell you to do something, you obey.
Been listening to ZZ Packer in this week's episode of Air Schooner's reading series. Packer read the beginning of her short story, The Ant of the Self. You can read the rest of the story in her 2004 collection, Drinking Coffee Elsewhere, published by Riverhead Books. Packer currently resides in Austin, Texas, and is working on a novel about the Reconstruction era. I'm your host, Adrian Kesters. Thanks for listening.
Want to enjoy Prairie Schooner on an e-reader? Now you can. Visit Amazon.com to buy the current issue of Prairie Schooner for only $6.99. Air Schooner is available on iTunes. Sign up now to subscribe. You'll be the first of your hip friends to get the latest episode, and you can download all past episodes all the way back to the premiere show, featuring Nulani Krohor's Irish poetry.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from James Redd, Ted Wheeler, and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprouls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.